Just before we dive into today's podcast, this episode is brought to you by Bloomreach Engagement. Now, they're an AI-powered marketing automation platform that personalizes the online shopping experience for your customers. Now, Bloomreach brings the power of AI in three ways: your customers' real-time data, the anonymous website visitors, and the Shopify data, so you know exactly what customers want, when they want it, and where to show it to them. Now, Bloomreach also enables Shopify companies to connect all of this understanding across all channels, so online, offline, including mobile, really to create the most personalized campaigns, engage in conversations with customers, you know, and most importantly, to deliver a shopping experience that's unique to each shopper. Now, Bloomreach marketing automation solution integrates seamlessly with all of your existing tech stack. It aggregates data across the entire customer journey. And as I mentioned, it really empowers you as the founder or as the marketer really to act on all of these insights from a single platform. Now, the company has over 30 AI patents and serves over 850 global brands. So you can learn more, ecommercefastlane.com/Bloomreach, or you can go direct, bloomreach.com, and get started today.
You're listening to E-Commerce Fastlane, the podcast show to help you build, manage, grow, and scale a successful and thriving company. Powered by Shopify. Listen to real conversations with partners and subject matter experts as they share proven practical strategies, platforms, and the best Shopify apps to help you accelerate your business. The time is now for you to improve efficiencies, grow revenue, profit, and lifetime customer loyalty. Please welcome your host, startup founder, and strategic advisor, Steve Hutt.
Welcome back to E-Commerce Fastlane. My name is Steve Hutt. I'm your host today. You know, thank you so much for joining our show today. You know, there's so many podcasts available in direct-to-consumer and marketing and in the agency world and in Shopify's kind of ecosystem. Thank you so much for showing up today. We have an incredible guest today. Actually, Ben, his name is Ben Zettler. He owns a company called Zettler Digital. I just looked a moment ago. He was on the show, believe it or not. Now, Ben's going to laugh about this because I just had a second child, actually. But he was on the show over 3 years ago, and we joked to kind of in the back room there, just kind of chatting about it and say, yeah, I think it was about a year or two ago I was on your show. And I was like, no, it was actually almost 3 years ago. I know things have changed for this partner. He's done incredible work. Some of the brands that he's now been working with. And, you know, when I take a look at his website today and I can see a lot of things are doing really, really well. Performance marketing, they do a lot of retention, a lot of website optimization. They're an elite Klaviyo partner. Very hard to be an elite member of the Klaviyo world. So it's going to be really exciting to talk about what they're doing to help Shopify brands to grow and scale from not just the development side, but all the way through the life cycle. So hi, Ben, welcome again to E-Commerce Fastlane.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. It's a pleasure to be back. You've built up something really special here and just honored that you would have me again.
Oh, no, my pleasure. You know, there's some incredible partners in the ecosystem. And I always tell people, saying every year we have to just kind of book every year at the same time because there's so much to talk about and things are rapidly changing. You obviously have significantly doubled down in the Shopify ecosystem. And I'm seeing, like, I'm watching all these clients, these trusted clients rolling by on your website. I'm like, wow, things have been really happening both for me, but they've really been happening for you. And I just think this is incredible. Incredible. Well, let's talk a little about what does it mean to be a plus certified agency partner? Like, just quickly so people understand what that is, because it doesn't mean that you have to be a plus powered brand on Shopify. I'm sure there's lots of core brands that are using you, but what does it mean to you to actually get to that level? And what was that process?
You know, that was something that was actually really important for us. For a long time, the Shopify Plus Partner Program was specifically reserved for two types of partners, either app developers or what I would call large scale agencies, a little bit different than ours. So folks that have, you know, 50 or 7,500 person teams are generally doing, let's say, web builds that are $250,000 and up, very intensive on systems integrations. And what that kind of created was this gap, I'd say, where there was a lot of great service providers, you know, not just us. We'd like to think that we're good, but there's a lot of really great folks that are out there.
Yeah.
Created this gap where we didn't have that stamp of approval from Shopify, yet we're working with businesses of all sizes. you know, folks that are either solo operators or in our case, core smaller teams. And I kind of pushed for it. Some other folks in my world a few years ago pushed for it. And we were brought on as an initial group of what they had called, and they don't emphasize the name as much now, but Shopify Plus Consulting Partners, so sort of a specific designation within the partner program, you know, just as folks that, hey, here's our stamp of approval from Shopify Plus. And what's really great is, because you kind of alluded to it, you know, there's all different types of businesses that we work with. Just because we're Shopify Plus partners does not mean that someone needs to be on Shopify Plus in order to work with us.
Right.
But it emphasizes that, you know, hey, if we're working with, let's say, for example, a mom and pop gardening equipment shop in Montana, which we do, or some, you know, fairly notable logos, we'll say, that folks could see on our website, that we're equipped to work with all of those types of merchants. And so, yeah, I mean, for us, the Shopify partnership in general over the last 10 years for us actually has been fantastic. You know, it's changed my business, changed my career, frankly, and we're really grateful for it. And so we're always happy to kind of, whether it's provide resources and insights and go through with the Shopify team, like, hey, how can we improve elements of the partner program? How can we improve elements of the product? How can we give feedback on the product? That's always something that we're happy to participate in.
Yeah, that's lovely. I know with the recent kind of Shopify additions that came out for winter and all these new updates and things like that, they always do little shout outs, little call outs of these agency partners that really are leveraging and helping and implementing a lot of the tools that Shopify has been released out into the wild. So it's pretty cool. Pretty cool that you're 10 years in. And I know Harley's made these comments years and years ago saying that, you know, one of the major reasons why Shopify is successful is because their partner program is completely different than any other kind of e-commerce platform partner program. You know, when you look at the Magento world, kind of post Adobe, really everybody was fighting each other, and there was just no semblance of order. Even in the WooCommerce world, same kind of challenge again, where it's different with Unite having these annual or semi-annual conferences. People are getting together, openly sharing and stuff like that. And I think that's the reasons why I decided to double down kind of in the partner ecosystem, agency and app partner, right from the beginning. Even though I was a Shopify employee, fair enough, but I saw what Harley and the rest of the team were building, and it's just like, here you are 10 years later.
You know, it's funny. I wish I had the foresight, but, you know, for me, I tell this story a lot. I probably even told it the last time I was on, that I kind of fell into Shopify. And I say that because I started a business myself on the platform a year prior to, you know, starting out what was kind of a consulting thing on the side and then became this agency. Mm-hmm. But at the time, you know, I had a few different options, I suppose, that were, it was unclear to me. It was a whole new world for me. Like, okay, do I put the website on Shopify? Do I go to one of these other platforms that I put out there? Right. And then, like, I chose Shopify. And then it just has become, for me and my journey, I guess, one step after another with the growth of the platform and learning more about how to operate within the platform, and then more broadly operate within just the e-commerce ecosystem and so much of that Shopify has contributed to.
Right.
And, you know, I you could call me all in on Shopify now, but it's something that has just built and built and built over time, which is all a very, very positive thing.
So let's talk a bit about some of the, I mean, it's not a pitch fest today, but, you know, you clearly are doing a lot of great work for a lot of great brands, and people are listening today and saying, hey, maybe that's one piece of my marketing tech or my marketing that I'm not doing well enough. And what can I learn in today's episode? But let's talk about some of the services that you offer that you feel that you've really doubled down on and are really excelling in. So I'll kind of open the mic back to you about, like, what sort of advertising or retention marketing. I see you do a lot of things, but I bet you do quite a few of them really well. And so I want to kind of give that opportunity to kind of share with our audience today.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate it. You know, it's funny because I see a lot of posts, like everybody in the agency world talking on LinkedIn about, oh, if you're an agency of many things, you know, you're an agency of nothing. Or if you're not an expert in one area, then, you know, what is it that you're really doing?
Who's your audience? Yeah.
Right. I go against the grain on that because, you know, for me, in my own personal experience, outside of just this agency, when A, when I was starting that business on Shopify, that was store number 41,000 or so on the platform. Not the earliest of adopters,
right,
but
yeah.
You know, when you consider now that there's millions of merchants on the right. platform, there's a lot of learnings that went into that, and understanding Shopify and how Shopify works and just the mechanics of the platform that, you know, translate that to today allows us to work with merchants that are, maybe they don't have the largest of budgets, maybe they're not the biggest of businesses, but they need somebody to help either guide them or do some implementation work on the platform itself, how to set up their website, how to format things.
Right.
But then at the same time, so before I took my agency full time, I worked for a company called Steiner Sports for a long time, for about 5.5 years.
Okay.
And Steiner was the largest autographed sports memorabilia company of its kind in the world. And one of the unique things about that company is that you had a lot of freedom to operate independently and to make certain things happen. It was a very intense place to work, but at the same time, I was the company's first full-time hire dedicated to social and digital marketing, you know, running Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, which had just come into existence, and, you know, building content and growing the following and doing all the things that ultimately, you know, led to site traffic, led to new email subscriptions, led to a whole lot of things, is something that I was right in the middle of for 5 years. Mm-hmm. So my role there went from overseeing not just social and growing what ultimately became a seven-figure following cumulatively across all channels, but then overseeing email marketing and overseeing advertising and eventually leading a replatforming to Shopify. And so there was all these different pieces of that business, again, because we had so much sort of freedom to operate and just, you know, make things happen. Results were what mattered there. Mm-hmm. That gave me a ton of experience across all these areas.
Yeah.
And so what we do now, just to go back to what your original question was, this is sort of my long-winded answer to it. There are three core areas of service that we concentrate on typically with the clients that we work with. That covers, for lack of a better metaphor, a tripod, we can call it, but a site optimization and work that we're doing inside of Shopify. So whether that be, you know, for the, we'll call it smaller merchant in terms of overall revenue, for just working within the confines of a theme to build a new website or optimize a landing page or, you know, plug in a couple of like key meta fields here or there. Or if we're doing more intensive UX work, custom development, custom app implementation, or anything else that, you know, are some of the things that are the, some of the reasons why we're ultimately Shopify Plus partners. That's all one bucket. Bucket number two, and not in any particular order, is own marketing. I'll get back to a little bit more detail around that in a little bit. And I think we're going to expand on that a little more today. But own marketing, email, SMS, we're kind of in the same way that we're very much all in on Shopify. We've been all in on Klaviyo for a number of years now. I've worked on the platform for 7-8 years. We've been partners, I think, for 5-6 years, something like that. And we've been elite partners now for, I think, 2 or 3 years. I'm losing track of time because we got a thing that I thought we talked about, maybe it was a year ago. I was like, no, it's three years. So that's another piece. And then the third being advertising management. We're Meta Business Preferred Partners. We're Google partners. Facebook, Instagram ads, and Google ads are very much a part of what we do on the day-to-day. And all these three areas ultimately all play off of each other. It's very much yin and yang, right? For every business. Obviously, right. There's different elements that come into play too. And there's things that we don't do. Like, I get questions all the time. Like, hey, we need new content created for our TikTok page. Can you help us with that? It's like, well, no, that's not really something that we do. But, you know, we can connect you with a good partner. We can recommend some services that can help you do that. So yeah, there's sort of a fairly clean line of like things we will do, things we won't. But again, to go back to what I said at the beginning, like, I really feel strongly that, and it's obvious at this point because everybody kind of talks about it, but you have to have your website buttoned up in order to have success in e-commerce. You have to have your own marketing strategy buttoned up in order to have success in e-commerce. You have to be fueling both of those things with users that are coming to you with intent to purchase, and that very often stems from advertising. So that's ultimately why we choose to cover those services.
This is really cool. You know, some of the topics that I see, I get DM'd a lot in social, and, you know, there's the whole kind of cookie apocalypse that's kind of happening. I mean, it started like way back with Apple with their 14.5 update to their OS. And then when I was at Shopify, one of the conversations with a lot of the brands was this unfortunate blended ROAS problem, because they weren't able to really attribute all of the success of their paid media just because of, you know, the non-tracking abilities from Apple. And now I think the next month or two, well, certainly in 2024, at some point, Chrome is going to completely block cookies and stuff there too. And then I think that opens up a whole opportunity of other tracking and identity resolution type tools and things that are out there. So how are you planning on managing the fact that at some point cookies are going to be blocked in Chrome? And then, so how is this first party data? The zero party would be, I think, what we talked about before, where, you know, certainly before recording today, about maybe quizzes and kind of like enriching the customer data with zero party data, which is things you've asked questions to enrich that customer record. But the first party data, these are all being blocked at some point completely. Are there tools in its place now that brands can implement that we're not using a kind of Google's pixel tracking things? That's another third party pixel that's firing that you get to still own the data for, and then can leverage that from an advertising or a retention perspective. I just want to get your mindset around that, because I think data is on a lot of people's minds.
Yeah, it's really interesting how rapidly that's changed over the last few years. You know, iOS 14.5, which even now years later, everybody's still talking about, because it was such an inflection point for brands and for marketers, and really initiating a shift to putting emphasis back on, I've used the term already, own marketing.
Right.
You know, it's not like email had gone anywhere over the last 20 years, but all of a sudden, email's the new advertising. It's like, no, it's not. It's just people are thinking about it in a more of a strategic way now, which is ultimately really a good thing. But that was, you know, just to talk about that for a second, like that was a really important key moment in all of this, because it forced marketers, again, brand side, agency side, to think about what they're doing, how they're promoting their business, and how they can get to users with intent most directly. And the answer in most cases, at least at the very beginning, was like, oh man, what are we doing with our Klaviyo account now? And, you know, right around that same time when the whole MailChimp and Shopify breakup thing happened, and then, you know, Klaviyo gets that influx of users. Now everybody's using Klaviyo. Now every app within the ecosystem, they're building a Klaviyo integration first. And like, it's just kind of this snowball effect.
Right.
But anyway, you know, the point being that having all of that information, regardless of whatever email or SMS platform you use, you know, having information about a user's interests and also their intent and, you know, their purchase history and all that, like all of that information contained there to where you can then potentially reach them directly and personalize the communication that you're sending to them, is super, super impactful. Now, in the time since iOS 14.5, which for anybody listening that doesn't know what we're talking about, I'll put it in as sort of high level, non-technical terms as possible.
Okay.
Where Facebook and Pinterest and any other app that's out there that has a pixel or the ability to track the actions that you're taking on a website after you're clicking through on an ad or a post was limited by Apple's update at the time from being able to track those actions, where it went from users having to opt out of that tracking to users having to opt in to that tracking. And, you know, of course, who's going to opt in to that? And then it became, you know, whatever the numbers were at the time, it was like, oh, 96% of users don't opt in. It's like, I can't even imagine that it's only 96. So like, you would think that it would be even higher. And so what brands lost was the ability to understand when users are actually taking certain actions, and then that information being reported back into ad platforms. You know, again, not Facebook specific, but Facebook was probably the biggest opponent of the whole thing and the most vocal about it. And plus, that's where everybody's spending their marketing dollars. And that really impacted the ability to drive profitable advertising, or without getting too far into the minutiae of it, like brands thinking that they were running profitable advertising, but then all of a sudden they're not. So what's been helpful for us over the last couple of years is a few things. One is and this is not a commercial for them, but I have been a huge fan of Elevar in the last few years, specifically because of what that app, that tool does for the enhancement of conversion related data.
I see.
I don't want to get too far into that, the weeds there, and do their team a disservice by not hitting on some of the technicalities of it. So that's not really my sort of area of expertise. But what Elevar does do is, a couple years ago, helped to bridge that gap between, you know, the data loss from iOS 14.5 of, you know, where you could or could no longer track the actions that users were taking on site. So essentially backfilling that information that you otherwise lost from the default tracking.
Right.
That's one thing that's happened. Now, another thing that's happened too is Facebook's default reporting and default tracking through different methods that they've implemented over time, sort of sans cookie, getting back to mm-hmm. the original question, has actually gotten better using various signals and other pieces of information, other ways to track info that, this sort of pending doom of a cookieless world.
Yeah, apocalypse.
is becoming a little bit less of as major of a concern as it seemed to be a few years ago.
I see.
Now that said, there's always kind of this piece of, when one thing changes, then it's like, okay, what's the sort of chain reaction to it?
Right.
And so, we'll see if there's as big of an impact. I don't think there will be because, not certainly as big as, 3 years ago, I think it was with 14.5, just because platforms, brands, everybody's prepared for it and preparing for it now. And so, it's tools like an Elevar that, they've been talking about that already of okay, what's going to happen when there is sort of this cookie-less world, and are you leveraging server-side tracking in order to properly track user actions and conversions that are happening on your site from advertising? And so, with a lot more folks talking about it, I see it having less of an impact. But for anybody that's out there, brand owner or whatever it might be, where you kind of see all these things and you don't really know what's happening or what to do or where to turn.
Right.
Again, without trying to make it too much about Elevar, I'd consider them, and there's some other players in the space too, tools that you can leverage in order to bridge that data gap. And that's really important.
Yeah. I love Elevar. I've had them on the show, and Little Data is obviously another great tool that is server-side, kind of API direct, and it will definitely enrich your GA and the customer record correctly. And it works, and both these tools work ridiculously well for people in the subscription space too, because a lot of times it looks like in a subscription that there's, for lack of a better word, like an entry in GA that it's a brand new customer, but it's actually not. It's actually like order number 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6, and it helps you with lifetime value and proper reporting. It helps with marketing better. And so that's what Little Data or Elevar does. So I'll put those in the show notes as a link. Anyways, you can kind of check out some podcast recordings with them. I think Little Data is coming up the next few weeks also. But I want to circle back a little bit about the owned media, because it seems like that's some of your superpowers, just being a Klaviyo elite partner. And I see a lot in social right now. And it seems like, as you said, like email seems to be like this reinvigorated kind of like, I want to own my list and I want to do content marketing and I'm going to do all these things around my brand building. And obviously having emails and SMS is the best way to be able to market directly to your customers. And then you understand that journey of them and they're opting in for the most part. Now, there are tools we'll talk about later, maybe that can allow you to get the email addresses like retention.com and a few others where they understand the unknown site visitor and can give you the email address for thanks for visiting sequence versus thanks for signing up or manually opting
which
in.
Which I'm very skeptical of, by the way. We'll talk about why, but
okay. All right. Fair enough. And I think there's two sides of this camp but from your standpoint, so let's talk a bit about how you believe a brand needs to leverage their email and their SMS strategy. Let's not talk about the anonymous site visitors, but these manually opted in people. How are we capturing these email addresses and SMS? Are there tools? Is there process? Is this the theme? Because there's going to be some DIYers listening today saying, yeah, I'm not doing it very well. I'm not building my list. I know there's benefits in it. What are the best of the best doing right now? Or what are you recommending for your retainer customers now?
There's a couple of really interesting things that I'm seeing lately. Inevitably, in order to grow a list, there has to be some element of give. You know, what is it that you're giving to the consumer in order to get their information? Very rarely are you going to see a brand that's able to grow a list to any, we'll call it significant degree. In most cases, yes, it's going to be 10% off, $10 off 50 or 15% off or some sort of a discount.
Right.
It doesn't have to be. It can be a enter for our monthly giveaway of a $250 gift card or free whatever or something. But there's always, I don't know, in my opinion, always going to be some element of that. You know, very rarely you're going to get somebody to sign up, hey, sign up for our newsletter. Unless like you're a fairly highly sought brand that has a highly sought after product that people need to know when you're going to release products because it's going to sell out. Like
yeah,
that kind
like
of
a special drop or something like that can happen, these right. flash sales and stuff.
Right, which you do see. Yeah, you do see, but it is more rare. Now, how you're presenting that incentive becomes then the key thing, since you know that's what most brands are having to do. What I had been a proponent of for a while, and it's kind of switched for me pretty quickly after kind of beating that drum for a long time of, you know, simplify that opt-in process. Here, give people their incentive. Ask them for their email. If you have an SMS program, ask as a second step for SMS and sort of be done. That's something that I've been a really big advocate for a while. But lately, I've really kind of flipped that perspective. Asking for information from a user directly within that signup process in order for them to unlock, you know, a first purchase incentive discount, something that they would receive within their welcome flow or on a confirmation after they've entered their email or entered their SMS number. That is so, so important. And I say so important, and I say it so, you know, kind of confidently because I have seen it already right now as of today, you know, the time that we're recording this podcast, brands that we are working with on implementing different tests where they are asking customers that visit their site or prospective customers that visit their site, hey, you've unlocked 10% off. Tell us why you're here in order to claim your discount. And I'm a gift buyer, or I'm a, you know, interested in X, or I'm interested in Y, or any questions that you might want to ask them. But being right. able to take that information and leverage that information inside of a Klaviyo or whatever email platform you use to identify what a user's interest is or what their purpose in being there is or any other sort of interesting information that could help you tailor the content and tailor the experience to them is so, so massively important. You know, if you can serve content to users right within a welcome flow or in other ways too, that they are more likely to be interested in, well, they are more likely going to make a purchase. And obviously that's really important. So, you know, we're seeing it already by leveraging things that we're just doing inside of, let's say, Klaviyo pop-up forms for some brands where, you know, we're asking for a prompt and then a response is being tied to a Klaviyo profile property that can then be used to either segment to certain audiences or add a conditional split within the body of a flow or even serve dynamic content inside of a message. That's become really, really important. And then we're also been experimenting with a bunch of different tools that are out there that allow for a little bit more flexibility with the formatting of these pop-ups and sign-up forms. Amped is one that's been gaining in popularity and gaining some steam over the course of the last couple of months. And we have a few clients that are testing that we're seeing very encouraging results, frankly. And yeah, I mean, there's just different things that are out there that will allow you to collect some information. You know, use that information is then the important piece. Like, okay, you could collect it. If you don't use it, then why are you collecting it? But then using that information to tailor the experience for users is, from what we've seen, really, really impactful.
Yeah, because I've seen it before where some brands, you know, aren't asking all the follow-up questions, or they're not thinking about how can I enrich this customer record? If they've made their first purchase or not, what can we do to enrich that for marketing perspectives? I mean, we get down the retention kind of rabbit hole too of like, well, I made my first purchase. How do I figure out what the second one is? What's the RFM model, the recency frequency kind of monetization strategy around the second and third sale, which is where the profitability lies by customer. And so, but, you know, obviously having that data available and being able to execute on it, I mean, I had one brand I managed before in the pet area, and they didn't enrich their data. And I kept telling them, I said, listen, you got to stop sending, like, you know, dog emails out to cat owners. Because they are a great example. I know, like, it happens a lot. How do you educate brands around that? Like, and then what are you doing to help enrich that so that it can be more personalized one-on-one if it's email or SMS?
Yeah, it's a conversation that I've been trying to have with folks for a long time, even though, like, my perspective on the pop-up thing has kind of switched more fairly recently. Even so, for the last few years, I'd say it's really been about kind of coaching in or training in brands to this idea that, hey, the more information that you have, the more tailored and targeted you can make certain pieces of messaging that's going to certain groups of users, you're going to see some impact. And that's from a just performance perspective, revenue that you're going to see, higher rates of purchase for when users ultimately are served that content, as well as actual performance of email content itself and thinking about things for the sake of deliverability and not reaching users that aren't engaged or that haven't purchased or that haven't provided certain information. It's all super important. And I think part of what has brands kind of understanding the process is a couple things. One is, as we've kind of gone through some of our tests of, you know, getting higher rates of opt-in in cases where we were actually asking for more information at the point of opt-in, That's been one. Like, once you see the numbers, it kind of becomes a little bit clearer. And then also, you know, all the different changes that have happened around email marketing over the last few years as well. So we talked about iOS 14.5, but I don't think enough gets talked about iOS 15 and what that did for specifically for the tracking of open rates when you're sending your email marketing. Yeah. Where, you know, I have had so many conversations where folks are saying, oh, well, we have a 50% open rate or 60% open rate. I don't understand why people aren't clicking on our messages or they're not buying from our emails. And the first thing I'll say to them is, well, 50% of people are not actually opening that message.
Yeah.
Because of what Apple privacy protection has done to limiting email service providers' abilities to read whether or not someone has opened. So if somebody uses an iPhone and they use Apple Mail, which for most lists that I've been inside of is roughly about, you know, at least 50% of that list, well, they send an estimated metric for whether or not someone has opened, and that has wildly inflated open rates over the course of the last 2+ years since that was implemented in October 21. And that's really, really important because so often I see brands that are also, you know, let's say I'll put aside the bucket of brands that, you know, they just send, they have 100,000 or 500,000 folks in their list and they send their email content to everybody. We'll put that aside. But even for the folks that, let's say, okay, here's our list of, or our segment of users that have opened once in the last 90 days, or they've opened 3 times in the last 30 days, or whatever other sort of combination of metrics. You know, they may think that they are segmenting down to a certain group of users without thinking that, wait, these users aren't actually opening the messaging. And that becomes something super, super important to pay attention to. And I think with, you know, what happened fairly recently with the Google and Yahoo sender requirements that have come into play and all the sort of technical things that every brand needs to be thinking about, not just thinking about doing, but doing inside of an account to make sure that they remain compliant, a big component of that is maintaining good sending practices. Sending to users that are most likely to engage with messaging, just from a, hey, have they bounced? Hey, have they not bounced? Have they opened? Have they not opened? Have they clicked? Have they not clicked? But then also the thing that helps to aid that is, well, are these people even interested? Or what content should they see? Like, the more content that they see frequently that is something that they are interested in, you know, it just creates this, I've used the term already, but snowball effect.
Yeah.
In a very sort of positive direction.
Yeah, and that's really good information because it made me think a lot about an automated tool like for Instagram and tracking management is through, I think, Brett Bernstein over at Gatsby.ai. Really neat tool. He's been on the show multiple times to really, and he's going down even a further journey of not just, as you probably are well aware, but not just an email potentially or an SMS. He does have a multi-stage kind of like process, but he's really thinking about the Instagram side of things and that connection with Instagram and Klaviyo and how you're able to get people to follow your brand. It's another part of the owned media opportunity that we kind of talked about. So do you have much experience with Gatsby and kind of what Brett's building?
Very much so, actually. Love Brett. They have a great team. And what they've created over there is pretty exciting. We've worked with a number of our clients on the platform, and you can kind of leverage it in a few different ways. You know, one brand I'm thinking of where you can use it as a way just kind of to simply reward customers, let's say. So, hey, tag us in a post and we'll send you $5 off your next order, something as simple as that. And then by giving your Instagram handle within a sign up form, Gatsby can read whether or not someone has tagged your brand in a post,
right?
Which is fantastic. But we have a brand also that kind of built their ambassador program off of it. So use it as a mechanism to understand, hey, what types of Instagram followings do these users have? So they, you know, fill out a form, they enter their email, they enter their handle, it pulls their username. Okay, we know this person has 50,000 followers, this person has 500 followers, and that can trigger that count. We can use as a conditional split within a Klaviyo flow to trigger certain messaging that goes to those two very different types of users. So something where like, oh, hey, thank you for applying. You know, you weren't necessarily the right fit. Like, I'm paraphrasing, that's not exactly how we word it, but you know, weren't a fit for the program at this time, but here's $10 off your next order. Or, you know, thank you so much for joining and you're in, and you know, please post this, and here's an access to assets and welcome to our community. But then when somebody with 100,000 followers comes in, it's like, well, wait, let's send an internal notification to somebody at the company that it gets triggered from a Klaviyo flow when that happens, and then have a message that goes from that person to the person that applied automatically to set up a call to say like, hey, let's establish like a little bit more of a formal partnership. So
yeah.
Gatsby is a very cool tool that we're super excited about, and something that really does help to enhance what folks are doing inside of Klaviyo because of, you know, the information that ultimately you can pull.
Oh, this is lovely. Once again, put that in the show notes again. And so we're getting kind of near the end of the show for today, but what sort of takeaways do you want to leave with people? Because it seems like, you know, data is important to brands. We have to think about that. We didn't dabble too much about the AI opportunity that's happening out into the world right now. I know Shopify has released a lot of their own kind of internal tools to help brands. And there's still, you know, back to the owned media thing again with AI, is just content production, you know, things like improving your images and your SEO. And there's a lot of things that are going on. Is there any kind of like, I guess, kind of final parting words, how you believe maybe data or the current state of kind of AI as it relates to commerce brands, and kind of like where you believe things are headed and how people can DIY it themselves, or where you believe that your agency can offer some assistance?
Well, you know, there's a lot of different ways that AI and automation tools can make processes more efficient, both for brands, for agencies. You know, one simple one, for example, like inside of Klaviyo, where you can leverage their AI segment builder now, where instead of doing the monotonous, you know, clicking around for 5 minutes to get to the specific set of users that you're, you know, trying to identify based on they've purchased X product over X time and they've satisfied other conditions from a survey that they've filled out or anything else, you can just type in a prompt inside of the platform and then it spits out that segment to you, and you can modify as needed without having to go through all those clicks. Like, that's just one example, but where I see it having the most impact, at least right now, until tools are refined a little bit further. I mean, you see different things that are out there on content creation and message and you know, what that can do. what that can do on a little bit more of an automated basis. And maybe that stuff will really come. But for now, it's kind of just more efficiencies. And from an operations perspective, like the impact that can have is sort of pretty immediate. Yeah, both for brands and for agencies. I think for brand operators that are out there, you know, thing to keep in mind when it comes to your own marketing is that it's as easy as it might be to just say, all right, here's the thing we're going to send out this week and send it to the whole list and then see what happens. You can certainly do that. I mean, obviously in the position I'm in, I'm biased because, you know, I think there's a lot more to certainly be done there, and having the right partner in place, whether that's an internal employee or an external agency, to really manage that process for you and understanding what impact differences in design and segmentation and cadence and automations and flows. And we didn't even get into like transactional messaging and things that I can sort of recommend there, and like the impact that can have. you know, if you're concentrating on that, again, whether it's in-house or agency or whatever it might be, it's just, there's so much impact that you can have there for your brand. And yeah, I mean, it, to some degree, like away from the noise of like all the changes to algorithms for advertising and everything else that might be happening in the world. Granted, that doesn't mean you can necessarily stop advertising in order to funnel the right, you know, traffic into your website and then therefore into your list to then keep the users in there fresh and getting, you know, sort of new blood into that program.
Right.
But there is so much that you could have a real impact on.
I think some more takeaways too is just going to your website. I think zettlerdigital.com. I subscribe to your blog. I think I even syndicate a lot of your content on e-commerce Fastlane because it really is impactful. You clearly are, you know, focusing more in the owned media space, but you know, I agree with you on your tripod kind of an acronym about, you know, site optimization side, the UX and the design and that sort of kind of a theme side of the business, but the owned media and then in relation to the advertising, the paid media side of it, owned media is so interesting to me. And I think that's kind of, it seems where you are really doubling down. I think that's great. I'll put links in the show notes to sign up for your newsletter, to go check out your blog. I think there's lots of great info there that'd be very, very helpful and impactful. And then is there any kind of parting words? Like, where do you want people to go next? If someone says, hey, I like what Ben's all about. I see the brands that he's dealt with. I see kind of where he's pushing forward. Where can people go next? And, you know, are you just kind of an audit, a kind of a warm intro? Kind of, what do you want our next steps to be?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if anybody wants to find me, I'm just at Ben Zettler on all major social platforms, super active on, I guess I have to say X.
Yes.
Not Twitter, but X and LinkedIn especially.
Yeah.
And then if anybody wants to check out our work, Zettler Digital, ZETTLER.com. You know, that's where you can learn a little bit more about what we do and certainly reach out if anything might pique your interest and you might be interested in chatting with us about how we can support your business. You know, we're always happy to get on like a free consult, free chat.
Yeah.
You know, kind of get an understanding of, you know, what the ins and outs of your company are and your brand and where the pain points are and where we could potentially step in to support. And yeah, I hope to hear from folks.
Yeah, I love that consultative kind of like business approach because you really are, from what I can see, you truly are a business partner to a lot of brands where, you know, yeah, you wear a lot of hats, you focus on a lot of key areas, but overall, you know, if you're not the direct fit, you know, from a custom developments and these sort of, you know, kind of areas, but there's a lot of great partners that you just are tight with because it works well. You know, if it's the Gatsby kind of example or Octane AI, if you want to, you know, Ben and Matt are building a great product with their quizzes and enriching that zero party data. There's lots of great tools and other partners that I know you're aligned with, obviously being with Klaviyo as being an elite partner. And so I think that's really cool that you're offering that service to people, like complimentary to see, is it a good fit? What sort of challenges are you having today? And then knowing what that is as a quote unquote, a business partner, potential business partner, you can say, well, yeah, we can help solve that like we have with this company or not good fit for us, but here's someone I think that can help you. Warm intro. And I think offering that, I think is just fabulous. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's sort of key to getting an understanding of what brands need that are out there and then certainly how we can help. So that's ultimately why we do that. But yeah, thank you. Yeah. Thank you for having me today. This has been great.
Yeah.
You know, any other follow-up questions that folks have, they can certainly reach out, but hopefully they found our discussion today helpful.
Lovely. Well, I did. I got 2 pages of notes, so. It makes it a good episode. The more pages I have, the better. Life of learning. That's my mantra. So this is lovely. Thanks so much for recording 3 years later. But we got to make sure we do this an annual event because obviously there's things happening in the marketing and development world. So
yeah, I love it.
You can push it to your calendar a year from today. All right, Ben, have a good one.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Well, that's it for today's episode. I'd like to thank you personally for being a loyal listener of E-commerce Fastlane. It's my hope that this podcast is offering you a ton of value through growth strategies, tactics, and exclusive insider tips on the best Shopify apps and marketing platforms, all with my personal goal to help you build, manage, grow, and scale a successful and thriving company powered by Shopify. Thanks for investing some time today and listening to the show. I'm so proud and excited that you have a growth mindset and are a constant learner. I truly appreciate you and your entrepreneurial journey. Enjoy the rest of the week and keep thriving with Shopify.